This is the Austin Road Show podcast. The Roads Rewind.
A couple of things. First of all, I knew when this thing hit, it was going to have legs. I didn't realize that it was going to be picked up by Drudge. James Brown was not murdered. Okay? James Brown was not murdered. There is an incredibly long CNN report. I don't know whether it exists in video form. I think it's probably being put together as part of a documentary. I read it online this morning, and it took me over an hour to read it. And I was only interrupted, I think, twice for very brief periods of time. And I'm a pretty fast reader. That's how long it is. You know what? Come to think of it, I did take a few minutes during the reading of the piece. I would see names, and I was wondering if that person's still alive and that person's still alive. So I probably took 10, 15 minutes on the side reading background material on people's names as they popped up. So it may not take an hour, but it takes a long time to read. I'll promise you that. But for the most part, in a nutshell, on James Brown. James Brown was a poor man's Elvis. And by the way, Elvis was a poor man's Elvis. In that he had a whole lot of gadflies around him that were not very sophisticated people. And he was not a sophisticated person when it came to finances or the judicial system. Elvis, to some extent, the Godfather of Soul, to a much greater extent. I'm not insulting him when I'm telling you this story. The man told the story himself sitting right next to me on this program over the course of 24 interviews. Almost every time that I was able to talk to him for longer than 5 or 10 minutes, and again, probably about 24 times over the years, he would always stress the importance of education because his lack of education had betrayed him and gotten him into a whole lot of trouble on numerous occasions. And unfortunately, even though he was well aware that he was lacking in education, sometimes he would either forget that or be under the influence of substances or in the throes of bad habits that clouded his judgment when it came to trusting certain people. He ended up with a whole bunch of hangers-on that were bad for him and bad for his business, bad for his health in a lot of different ways. James Brown, much like Elvis, because he had spent so much time as an idol, became a man-child. And one of the primary problems with children is that you have to babysit them. And JB was a man, unfortunately, because of his advanced age, his lack of education, and unfortunate habits that he had developed. He really had to be babysat by very conscientious people. And unfortunately, way too often, the people in his life were not conscientious. Even the ones that he went to his grave trusting the most, like David Cannon, his longtime bookkeeper who has since died, was a massive, massive thief. Now, in the piece that appears on CNN's website, you can link through it to it through the Drudge Report. There are repeated references to Buddy Dallas, and they're not flattering references. But and I take exception with that for a couple of different reasons, primarily because I've known Buddy Dallas for about 30 years now, and I trust him and I believe him. He's never lied to me, and I've asked him some very serious questions on some very serious matters, and there's not been a single time when what he has warned me about or predicted to me didn't happen when it came to the Godfather of Soul. And there were certain things he gave me the heads up on. Hey, don't trust this person. Trust that person. This person's good. This person's not so good. And he called it right down the pike. Every single person that he had warned me about, Buddy Dallas, ended up being someone that you had to watch out for. Every person he said to trust, I ended up trusting. And for the most part, it turned out pretty well. One of these gadflies, and it's somebody that I met 30 years ago, back in 1998, or 1988, excuse me. Her name at the time was Jackie Daughtry. Her name is now Jackie something else. She is the main center of this story. that CNN's working off of. And her main contention is that she was raped by the godfather of soul, but she still maintained a relationship with him and his wife. And his wife knew, his dead wife, by the way, Adrian, knew that that James had raped Jackie, but she still was friends with her, even though Jackie was making accusations. I mean, some of the most ridiculous and convoluted BS ever. But unfortunately, these are the kinds of people that James Brown was surrounded by. Now, I understand there are a lot of people out there that say, Austin, until you're a woman who has been in the throes of sexual assault, you don't know how you're going to react. I'm sorry, Jackie Daughtry, way too street smart, way too street savvy to be anybody's fool. While there's absolutely no doubt that she could have been raped, in other words, proximity and opportunity and all that, James Brown to rape her if he was of the mind to do so. I don't think he did it. I think she's making a grab for money and attention, and I think she's mentally ill. Those are my opinions. I got to know her 30 years ago, and my opinion of her 30 years ago was, man, this young lady's lucky because she's marginally talented, and her most obvious talent was being able to warm up to rock stars. She was married, I think at the time, to a member of Atlanta Rhythm Section. And she also hung out with a bunch of the Atlanta Falcons football players at the time as something of a glorified groupie. And again, these are my personal assessments. Miss Daughtry, or Jackie, whatever her last name is now, has put herself in the crosshairs because she is making some incredibly outrageous claims involving, you know, organized crime, putting out the hit on people. And again, what's crazy about this, 8,000 different aspects of crazy, she is a marginal personality in that she's one of these kinds of people that, because of who she hangs around and the way that she has lived her life in the past, if she turned up dead from a drug overdose somewhere, or she just disappeared, while it would be a tragedy for her family and her friends that know her and love her, it wouldn't be a surprise. You know, my wife is a high school teacher who has a 9-year-old son that she loves and adores and a husband that she keeps up with. Notice I'm putting me on the same pedestal as Bo. But she does love and adore the cat, too. And she wouldn't disappear without raising, there'd be a lot of eyeballs. I mean, there'd be a lot of attention on that story. Jackie Daughtry was the kind of person, because of who she ran around with and the kind of life that she led, if something did happen to her, again, it would be tragic. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that nobody would miss her. I'm just saying that there are a lot of folks that would say, well, yeah, okay, that kind of figures. And I'm talking about back in the day when she said that she was targeted by nefarious mobsters and assassins for all kinds of clandestine surveillance and perhaps assassination. It would have been, if she had real information that was valuable, it would have been way too easy to take her out. I think she's a sad, demented person. God bless her. Okay, also there's somebody running around purporting to have a vial of his blood. That's asinine beyond belief. Why anyone would do that, I mean, keep it this long without having it processed, is ridiculous. Also, I think it's highly dubious that you could have something this long and not expect it or expect it to be unassailable as far as evidence goes. I mean, it's a vial of blood that could have come, let me back up. We'll just pretend for a minute that it came from JB. It could have been altered the day that it was drawn. You know, they don't allow blood samples or even body tissue samples to be admitted in court cases if they've ever broken chain of custody. You know what chain of custody is?
Not exactly.
That's a sworn law enforcement officer present when it's drawn and immediately taking possession of it. It would be, think about it for a minute. Say you're testing someone for DUI or drug whatever. The person that is having the drug test done slips a $100 bill to the lab tech. And so the lab tech just very quickly switches out a vial of blood as it's drawn. And since there's no one that's an officer of the court or a law enforcement officer there to witness it, it's easy to do. That's why you can't do tests that way. Chain of custody. You have to have sworn law enforcement officers around at all the time. Now, you can technically, I guess, bribe a cop, but that's a hell of a lot harder to do. So the vial of blood that the guy is carrying around, if he is in fact carrying it around, means nothing. A couple of the folks that have been heavily quoted in the piece are dead. The husband of Yama Brown, his name was Lumar, L-U-M-A-R. I met him on numerous occasions, and he was a slime ball the instant, I mean, you just knew it. He was a slime ball. He was murdered by somebody. It could have been anybody, because that's what happens to slime balls. And people want to run around saying, well, he was saying that James Brown was murdered and everything. Why does it benefit anyone to say James Brown was murdered? One simple reason. If you discredit anyone having to do with his official organization, you immediately throw everything that the will said and ordered into doubt and under suspicion, which means that basically the will is invalidated. And if the will is invalidated, you go back to common law in South Carolina, which means the wife gets everything, or the wife shares everything with blood relatives. In other words, depending on the way things are set up, there could have been property that he owned before they were married that would go to the children, but any property that was obtained or shared in the marriage would go to Tommy Ray. So there are all kinds of nefarious gadfly. As I said online earlier today when I referenced this, there are more flakes in this story than Tony the Tiger sold last year. And I've known them to be flakes for decades. Adrian Brown was not murdered. Adrian Brown did illegal drugs in the recovery room from her cosmetic surgery in California. That's how she rolled. She did cocaine at the Aiken courthouse while her husband was on trial. We'll be back. So there are a lot of very sad people that are making noise on this James Brown thing. And as far as the doctor goes, here's what I think about a doctor who would say that, you know, he thinks something may have happened to James Brown. It was up to you, doc, to order an autopsy if you felt like there was something amiss. That last time I checked, that's your ethical and legal responsibility. If you're the doctor that signed off on the death certificate, you better be damn sure what you're signing. And if you're not, that's on you, not on anybody else. Now, I was the last person to do an in-depth broadcast interview with James Brown. He was on the Comcast Connect Live show on a Monday night. He was dead a week later. I'm going to say that he made one final public appearance before he died, and that was the toy giveaway, if memory serves. And I'm trying to remember what day of the week that was. But he was very, very tired. His driver, his limo driver, who was right here on the show with me the day after he died, talked about how uncharacteristically tired he had been in the last month of his life. As a matter of fact, he said, you know, Mr. Brown never slept in the limo, ever. And if we were on a short trip, and he said he didn't take the limo on long trips. He said, if we were on a short trip, you know, from his house to your studio, he was always looking out the window. He loved waving at people. See, he's like watching stuff go by, commenting on cars, commenting on everything he saw. He said, for the last month that I was driving him around from Thanksgiving until he died Christmas Day, right at midnight Christmas Day, he was very, very tired. He said he perked up when he was on the Connect Live show with me that Monday before he passed away. And I want to say he passed away exactly a week to the day later, because we did that show on Monday, and Christmas Eve was Sunday, And the only reason I know that off the top of my head is because my father and my daughter and I were all in Pittsburgh for Bill Cowher's last home game. We didn't know it was going to be his last home game at the time, but it ended up being that way. A week later, I was in Cincinnati with my wife for his last game, period. But anyway, there were a number of people close to Mr. Brown who made the comment the night that he was on Connect Live, this is not going to be a happy Christmas. None of us knew he was going to be dead that day, but we could see him going downhill, and we all acknowledged also, Bill Botham and I have talked about this many times over the years, because he was helping produce that show that night. He was working for Comcast at the time, and we all said this will be the last James Brown toy giveaway with him here. That's how bad he looked. That's how down he was. Mr. Brown, particularly in broadcast interviews with me, on a scale of 1 to 10, fluctuated energy-wise between an 8 and a 10 every time except that time when he was down to about a 3. And that's massive when you consider him. He was pleasant. He was engaged, but he had no energy, and he looked like a walking skeleton compared to how he normally looked. I remember when he got up out of the chair, he had to be helped, and that had never been the case before. He was springing up. He was the godfather of soul, and, you know, take a look at the video of him a year before he died. I don't know. There have been people that have saying that his physical performances greatly suffered the last year of his life. And I don't know that. I didn't see him perform live much in the last several years of his life. But I remember distinctly seeing a televised appearance right around January of the year before he died. And I noted at the time to my wife, God in heaven, that I can move now. And that was, Lord, I was 44 then, I guess, or 40, 41, something like that. It's crazy how spry this man was late in his life. But he was that sick. He had cancer. He had prostate cancer. And it had spread. And he was very uncomfortable. And I hate that there's so many people that don't have access to that information that think, well, you know, he was healthy when he went in the hospital. No, hell no, he was not. And by the way, he went to the dentist office in Atlanta, and he had a very, very high temperature, and he was sick. And the dentist said, Mr. Brown, you need to go to the hospital. And they took him straight to the hospital, and JB knew his body was shutting down. He told Charles Babbitt that. Mr. Babbitt. Mr. Babbitt told the story that night, and he told it 100 times after that night, that the last thing James Brown said to him is, I'm going home tonight. And he did. And murder had nothing to do with it. And it breaks my heart. This man's constant philanthropy, and was he a tortured soul? Absolutely. Was he imperfect? Oh, God, yes. Horribly imperfect. But I believe that the vast majority of what was broken about James Brown was broken long before he ever attained wealth. And that he lived, I'm not going to say an exemplary life, but he lived a trouble-free life until he met Adrian. And Adrian introduced him to a level of drug use that was uncharacteristic. Watch the movie Get On Up. And the reason I say that, I mean, you can, if you don't trust me or believe me on it, you can read any number of authoritative books on the topic. And while JB did smoke reefer, like every other musician in the world back in the day, he didn't do hard drugs. He didn't do alcohol. And he didn't like people who did. But unfortunately, when he hooked up with Adrian in the early 80s, right after the Living in America hit, she introduced him to a lifestyle that he didn't shy away from. He embraced it. Most of what he got into was either straight out prescription abuse or he had been indoctrinated into the belief that things he was taking were more medicinal in nature and not just built to get you high. Things that would help you get through the day, that would put more pep in your step, not make you hallucinate and do crazy things, and not even necessarily make you feel good, no pun intended, just get you up and get you going, get you moving. And again, I can only speak through what I saw with my own eyes on that last week of his life. And I've been around some people that have been terminally ill, and he had the look of someone terminally ill. He had the sound of someone terminally ill. And we all said the night that he was in our studio, and he was on the Christmas edition of the show, I want to say every year for like 6 or 7 years. We all said that night, this is going to be the last one. I didn't know it was going to be a week later, but heartbreaking. And it you know, is this fake news? I've had 1,000 people ask me, is this fake news, CNN fake news? I think they tell you at the onset of the story that there's no way to verify the claims that these people are making. There are some very odd and strange coincidences, and there's some very strange claims that are made within the course of the story, notes that were made 15 and 20 years ago that have resurfaced that seem to indicate very strange things. All I can tell you is the people who made the claims were not people of substance. They were gadflies. They were very, very serious, shady, very seriously shady. And there's no other way to put it. And Jackie Daughtry is one of those people. I met her 30 years ago. That was my opinion of her then. It's my opinion of her now. And unfortunately, James Brown, just like Elvis Presley, just like John Lennon, just so many other great and gifted artists, often made personal choices in their personal life that did not make the most sense. I just got off the phone with Keith Jenkins, who is James Brown's lead guitarist, and he was reminding me of the last time that he saw Mr. Brown, which was at the end of a Croatian tour, I guess about a month before he died, and they were on separate planes, but he made a comment to himself and maybe one of the bandmates as they parted ways. That's the last time I'll ever see him. And he was telling me that he was in Augusta actually rehearsing with Larry John Wilson, God rest his soul, another great musical talent we lost, on a different project. And he had intended, Keith Jenkins, to make an appearance at the James Brown toy giveaway. But when he got there, Mr. Brown had just left. But he saw the coverage on the news later on and, again, was taken aback at how bad he looked. James Brown was in the advanced stages of prostate cancer. And, again, just completely a shell of his usual energetic self. Now, this is a man, understand, who was in his early 70s at the time. You expect someone in their mid to late 80s or 90s to maybe move that slow, not James Brown, particularly, again, who went from being a man who looked like he was 50 or 55 to someone who looked like he was 85 to 90, you know, within 6 months. This business that he went in the hospital strong is just absolutely ridiculous. And again, any doctor that says, well, you know, I should have insisted on the autopsy, but the family said, you don't know. No. For James Brown, yeah, you have somebody. They checked him into the hospital, and he was dead 6 hours later. That almost always means a mandatory autopsy, unless doctors sign off on it that it's okay. And there's some cases, you know, if you've got somebody that's a long-term cancer patient or heart patient and they're not feeling well and they go to the hospital and die in 6 hours, then okay, I understand that. But if there's any doubt at all, no. And I don't know what that doctor's, I don't know what point he was trying to make. And, you know, it's disturbing to say the very least. Anyway, I'm hoping Keith's going to be able to talk to us. He wanted to finish reading the lengthy CNN piece before he made any official comment. But, again, this was my response to it, this epic article speculating that James Brown was murdered. More flakes quoted in that story than Tony the Tiger sold last year. several of these people that I consider flakes, I have known and have interviewed going back to 1988. Lots of money, lots of drugs, more gadflies than hovered around Elvis. Jackie Daughtry, whose last name is something else now, and I'm sorry, it just slipped my mind. She worked with James Brown. She was here in Augusta on numerous occasions and had her, I was going to say I didn't have her on this show because this show didn't exist at that time. Her association with him that I knew about was in the mid-80s. Well, 88, 89, around in there. She was a hanger-on. And she was the wife of another famous musician, relatively, one of the members of the Atlanta Rhythm Section. And there's no doubt that he worked with her, and James Brown loved to work around a lot of pretty women. No doubt about it. But he raping her? No, I'm sorry, I don't buy it. There is an author that is mentioned in that piece by the name of Stanley Booth. Stanley Booth was introduced to James Brown and Jackie Daughtry by Greg Patton. Greg Patton was the news director here at WGAC back in those days. Greg Patton was the first mentor in news business that I had, not in the broadcasting business, but in the news business. And he was an incredibly bright man, very, very hardworking. And unfortunately, he left GAC in the early, mid-90s and went off and worked some other places. We were able to bring him back when I came back and started doing my show in the late 90s, early 2000s. I was going to say he passed away in 2005, not too long after I got married. When it was, as a matter of fact, it was my wife and I got married in July of 2005, and literally within the first month of her going back to school. I'm going to have to look up what date it was, but she had to take time off from work to come to Greg's funeral, which was held in the city council chambers of the Augusta City Commission. But Greg was the one who introduced Stanley Booth to Jackie. And again, Stanley is quoted in the piece, and whatever he says to her or whatever he says about her is from very vague memories. He wrote a book called Rhythm Oil, where there was an article about James Brown's troubles, mainly associated with his arrest back in the late 80s, on the North Augusta police chase. But they ask him in the CNN interview, do you believe Jackie Daughtry was raped? And he said, I don't know, maybe, probably, I don't know. But whatever happened to her, she didn't run away from James Brown. She stayed right there with him and stayed friends with Adrian. It's crazy. It's insane. And then she turns around and tries to sue the estate for damages because of a rape that she never pressed charges on back in the day when it happened. It's absolutely insane. Was there a relationship between the two of them? Yeah. Was it rape? I don't believe so. James Brown never had to rape anybody. And I understand that, there are a lot of entertainment personalities like Bill Cosby never had to do what he did. And JB's been accused of doing a lot of things to a lot of people. Raping women? No. No. And again, that she hung around as long as she did, I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I think she is disturbed, Jackie Daughtry. And didn't think much of her back in the late 80s and early 90s when I knew her, as a coworker of James Brown's, but really don't think much of her now.
Thanks for listening to the Rhodes Rewind of the Austin Rhodes Show. Listen to Austin weekdays from 3 till 6 on Augusta's News Talk and Information Station, WGAC, at 95.1 FM, 101.9 FM, and AM 580. Stream it live on WGAC.com or on the WGAC mobile app. Thanks for listening to the Rhodes Rewind of the Austin Rhodes Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.